Hello everyone and welcome back to Free Kick, the Fantasy W podcast. I'm your host Jono, and today we are jumping into the heart and soul of any football team, the midfielders. This is a huge part of our fantasy teams this season, and I'm very excited that we're going to get stuck into this. These are our players with the highest averages, but also costing the most money. So it's going to be big decisions here, a lot more on the line than usual. But before we get into it, let's check in with some of our other co-hosts here on the podcast today. Liam, how you doing?
Yeah, look, I'm very keen for tonight. I'm really keen to chat about midfielders. I feel like a lot of the strategy around the structure of your team centers around what you're going to do about different types of midfielders. So I think this is going to be a useful exercise for myself as well as hopefully the listeners.
And Mel, I'm very excited to see that you've been wearing a little bit of a white hat today.
Yeah, today's been a great day. Not only did my top 100 hat come in the mail because I came 94th in season 6, but also our article got published on The Dub about our pre-season reviews and fantasy key takeaways. So it's just been a very exciting last 2 hours.
Yeah, a whirlwind. It's good to have the hat on, though. I'm excited. I can see that Liam's got his on as well. It's not been delivered yet because he put his address in a little bit incorrectly and late. So he's just found another white hat around the house.
You didn't have to rip me. I didn't put it in incorrectly. I just put it in late. Like, I know how to type my own address, Jono. You make me sound like a moron.
You never know. And finally, we've got Will. Will, how you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm also wearing a hat, but my hat is very different to all yours because I didn't get one of those. So feeling very left out, actually.
There's always next season.
Yeah. I guess that's the aim, I suppose. But yes, very excited to be here to be talking midfielders. I've been mixing and matching my midfield a lot over the last few days, so very keen to get some opinions on who are the players that we need to get in there.
Yeah, it's a tough line. It's another tough line. I think from my team, it's probably the one that I don't think, from the first team that I created to the team that I currently have now, I don't think there's a single player that's survived the journey. So it's exciting to get into it.
Yeah, it really feels like the line you have to pick first so that you can base the rest of your team around it.
We're going to start exactly as we did yesterday. We're going to talk about who we expect to be our top 5 midfielders in the midfield line. And I think we've got a pretty clear top 4 at the very least. Last season we had 4 players averaging over 100, and I think they're probably going to be in our top 4, our top 5 again this year at the very least. Starting at the top, we have Kiara Bowers and Ebony Marinoff. So Bowers and Marinoff have been in the top 5 for the past 3 seasons in a row. They are just ridiculously consistent, and it comes off the back of not just getting a lot of the ball, but mainly their tackling around the ground, which has been pretty impressive. Following those two, it's going to be a little bit less predictable, but I think we've got Anne Hatchard at number 3 from the Adelaide Crows. We have Ash Riddell at 4 from North Melbourne, who also averaged over 100 last season. And then at 5th, it's a little bit controversial. It's a bit difficult to figure out, but I find it very hard to go past the league best and fairest winner, Emily Bates, from last season. She just fell outside of the top 5 with Hayley Miller coming in slightly ahead of her, but she is looking fit and raring to go this season. So excited to see how they go. There's a lot of close candidates there who might jump in. But guys, starting at the top there with Bowers and Marinoff, I mean, I think it's fairly clear that they're going to be in that top 5. But is it worth paying up for them?
I just want to go back to something you said yesterday in the Defenders episode, which is that there's a sum of value and sorry, my thing was spiking red, so I'm going to say that again from over here. I want to go back to something you said yesterday in the Defenders episode to start off with, which is, as the season goes, the value is going to be lost from some players and added onto the others. And I get a little bit nervous with these kind of top 2 at the risk that how much more value are they going to be able to gain, particularly with Bowers. Because she's been off, she didn't play either of the practice matches because she was off for H&S, probably COVID. The article write-up said she was going to be off for another week with COVID. How's she going to go coming in? Is she going to be at peak fitness? And my theory is that she's going to be one of those players, at least in the early weeks, that loses some value so others can go up.
Yeah, look, I reckon that the likelihood that she comes in even just a little bit underdone scores an 80, which means she will rapidly drop in price, given she's priced at 115, means that that price at the beginning of the season is unsustainable. So I'm not going to start with Bowers, because I also think that there are other captain's choices, which is, I see, the only reason you would have to pick Bowers is because you don't think there are other people to pick as your captain.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing about Marinoff is Marinoff's priced at 104, which is only slightly above Hatchard and Riddell. But with that career of consistent scoring, to me, if you're looking for one of those big two who you know is almost guaranteed to be in that top two or three players, Marinoff is probably the one that's a safer option, especially now that Bowers has missed a few practice matches with the COVID. So Marinoff of those two is probably the better value pick. But we do know that Bowers can score absolutely massively.
Yeah, Ebony Marinoff was sensational in the practice game against North Melbourne. She only played three quarters, but particularly that first half, she was just dominant. There wasn't anything anyone on the field. She would have had 15 touches in the first quarter alone. I was seriously impressed.
I have seen some stuff going around on Twitter, though, of immediately captaining Bowers in your team when Season 7 opened. But I've got to say, I'm not sure that that's the right move, and it's definitely something I won't be doing.
I mean, last season, all four of us started with Bowers, didn't we?
Yep.
As our captain.
As the captain. Yeah.
And I jumped off the earliest as well, to my detriment. So yeah. it's a big risk to miss out on a player who can average 115.
Yeah, there's a high correlation here of people who had Bowers in their team and won hats. The first to jump off was the only one who didn't get it.
I had Bowers. I just missed out on 157, and that's basically the difference as well.
Just to kind of piggyback, though, I think combined with the fact that these super highly priced players are going to probably have to lose some value just because of the way the game mechanics work, Fremantle starts with a very tough game against Brisbane, the toughest team to score against last year. That probably sets Bowers back a bunch of cash in the first 3 weeks, which means she is almost affordable if you structure your team correctly and factor in price rises from maybe your M2, M3, and you could get up there.
When we talk affordable, I mean, we're talking about her at a current starting price of $194,000 coming down to $150,000, which would, if she was at 150, right, she's still in the top seven players, most expensive players in the game.
Yeah, but it's obviously a question of pricing versus potential. She only needs one bad week, one underdone week, where you probably wouldn't want to pick her as a captain coming off a limited preseason. Short of it being, you know, some catastrophic amount of rain and you knew she would be in for like 16 tackles, I just think it's too risky.
It definitely does seem the safer option to not start with her, but I won't begrudge anyone who does want to start with her. But I might cut us off there on the Bowers Marinoff debate, because I think there's a much harder time that we're going to have picking who's going to be the next three in the line. So I've got Hatchard, Riddell, and Bates as our options there. Liam, you've been pretty hot on Anne Hatchard this preseason. Do you want to tell us why?
Yeah, so Anne Hatchard, and we talked about it in the Adelaide episode. Anne Hatchard played most of last season injured, and she still managed to get her average to 103. She went to the ridiculous next level of leading the competition in marks, and she is the youngest of these top five midfielders. I don't see her going below what she is priced at. Baked into that score is a score in the 30s from last year. She would have otherwise been 105, 106 averaging player. And here's the additional reason why I'm super hot on Anne Hatchard. As much as we loved what Noffy did last year, she was not always a particularly good captain at points. Whereas Anne Hatchard has the advantage of being substantially more consistent. Even if she doesn't hit those like 140s and 150s, she is a much better captain choice week on week because she can hit that 110, which very few players are able to do.
Yeah, when I didn't have Bowers, I had Hatchard as my captain. And I was really pleased with how she went for me last season. And almost that loyalty is carrying on for me out of the Marinoff-Hatchard debate going into this one. So I'd say she's a definite three with the potential possibly even to move up into one or two by midway through the season.
Yeah, I love Anne Hatchard. She's one of my absolute favourite players to watch. I do have I have been burnt by Anne Hatchard. Last year, as we talked about earlier, I jumped ship on Bowers a week early to get in Anne Hatchard, and I copped her 37 Anne Hatchard, which really hurt, I will say that, especially when the other captaincy option, Bowers, scored 157. But for me, I'm actually really interested in Ash Riddell. And the reason I'm interested in Ash Riddell is across the home and away season, in season 6, Riddell only dropped below 90 points once for a low score of 84. So to me, that is an almost guaranteed 90 every single week for your captain, which is incredibly consistent. Has a ceiling of 126, so can really smash those high ones. To be fair, that she did break the AFLW record for disposals to get there. But I just look at her and think she's a super consistent player to build your team around.
Just two flags with that. One, you say that it's super consistent, that's why you're hot on Riddell. That stat you raised about scores below 90. If you take away Anne Hatchard's game where she was literally injured and off the ground, that's the same story for Hatchard. But here's the bigger flag with Riddell. In order to have her best score of the season, she needed to break the league record for possessions. And that's because she's a high hand pass player, which does come with some risks. Whereas Hatchard has marks and still tackles, and Noffy kicks a boat ton and then also tackles. I would come with a little mini asterisk et that she might not be able to back it up.
See, I agree with you there. I agree with you there, but the week before that, she had 117 with only 28 disposals and had 22 kicks. So to me, she can do it both ways. I think that Hatchard's methods of scoring her big scores are more sustainable. I will agree. If anything, I'm actually looking at Riddell simply for the uniqueness. I think a lot of people will trend towards those Adelaide big two. So I think if I go for Riddell, I get a slightly more unique option, which may benefit me in the long run.
Riddell didn't just set the record for most disposals in a single game last season, but she also did the record for most disposals in a season. Is that something you're thinking she can back up again?
I don't see any reason why she can't, to be honest. I think she's an elite ball winner and is only going to get better. I think she's right in the prime of her career. I do think that she'll be in the mix, probably with players like Eb Marinoff. So I think that there's no reason to assume she won't be another high disposal winner and another high fantasy scorer.
Look, having a look at her in the practice match the other day, she did look very solid again in her hit out against the Adelaide Crows. Being able to rack it up there against pretty good opposition is always a good sign. I just have my concerns over a player who has come off a best season ever or something like that and needs to back it up the following year, which probably brings me to my next player here. Mel, one player that you've put up here, I suppose, is Emily Bates, who has just come off a league best and fairest, looked absolutely sensational last year. Do you reckon she can go at it again?
Yeah, I mean, anyone who saw the St Kilda game on Friday, they saw just how great Batesy was coming into that one. She's really proven herself as an elite player that deserves to be in the top five. As you mentioned before, Brisbane are a killer team to come up against, and if they're equally as strong this season, she'll be around the ball heaps, racking up those points. I personally didn't have her in my team last season. I think I actually had three of these five and not Batesy at various times. But she's definitely one that has the potential to go up in value, especially early on in this season.
Yeah. Something that I think is a bit ominous for some of the other teams out there. Emily Bates said herself last season that the reason that she got on top of her game and improved her average from, you know, a mid-60s, 70s average up to that, you know, 90s, which let's just put that out there. She wasn't looking at her fantasy average all year at any stage, but...
You don't know that.
No, I don't know that, but I think it would be very unlikely. But she did that on the back of an improved running capacity. She started training with, you know, Orla O'Dwyer and some of the other very good runners at Brisbane. This preseason, she's come out and beaten her best 2-minute time trial run, and she hasn't just knocked off a couple seconds, she's knocked off 30 seconds off her time.
Yeah, wow.
Which is a very, very improved effort.
So I completely hear what you're saying, but do you think that by virtue of being the league best and fairest, it comes with two problems? One, midfielders will now come at you as though this is the hit out where they need to win it, like to be able to prove themselves. But then secondly, she of these top five is most likely to cop a tag as a result. And additionally, because she is quite susceptible to a tag, if only because a lot of her good possessions are her elite running means that she was always trying to get cheap 15, 20 meter kicks as Brisbane uses their ball movement down the wing and then through half forward to really be able to kind of take that average from 70 to 90. I'd worry about the tag. It's pretty substantial with Emily Bates above anyone else in this top five.
I mean, fair.
Yeah, I see what you mean. They have got the most challenging fixture of any team, and that's going to hit her across the season. And Will, correct me if I'm wrong, was she tagged in last year's prelim final by Melbourne?
Yeah, I don't know if they put on a hard tag, but I think they definitely put in a fair bit of effort into stopping her. I think that was very clear. I think Maddie Gay might have gone to her in that game. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they definitely put effort into stopping her, and it went a long way to helping the D's win that game, is curbing that influence. One of the things I will say about Em Bates, it seems like she's been in the competition forever, being an inaugural Lion. She's still only 26. So she's still got a lot of really good years and a lot of good fantasy years ahead of her. So even if this isn't, you know, it's a big year to follow up on a best and fairest, but I think there's a lot of really good fantasy scores still to come in seasons to come with Emily Bates. So I don't think it's the worst option personally, but I agree that she's probably going to cop a lot more attention this year than she did last year.
Yeah, I can see that. And I'm hopeful that she'll be able to burn off any tagger with that engine, but we'll have to wait and see, I suppose. There's a number of players sitting just outside our top five that I might quickly get some opinions on. Mel, I'm going to throw to you first. One player that a lot of us had in our teams last season was Emma Swanson from the West Coast. What do you think she's going to do this season?
Yeah, so I've got a few thoughts on her because, once again, so West Coast coming in as wooden spooners and they're going to want to be proving themselves. She was kind of single-handedly leading the midfield for West Coast last season, and we all had her because she wasn't listed as a mid. Looking at the preseason game, looking great, looking fit, she's going to pretty much keep doing the same. But now that she's listed as a mid, there's a lot of people that will potentially, I suspect, not put her in their teams because there's so many other great options like we're talking through. And it's kind of, oh, you know, I only wanted her when she was a defender and now I'll pick different mids. So she could be a really good opportunity for a bit of a point of difference, a unique pick here, but also one that's going to be the dominant person on the team for a team that can't really do worse than they did last season.
Yeah, I actually love Emma Swanson as a unique option. I think you're exactly right, Mel. A lot of people will go, well, she's no longer that midfield. She's no longer that defender, so why would I want her in my midfield? But an average of 88 is a fantastic average in a pretty a team that didn't perform particularly well last season. So I actually think it's a really interesting option to pick in that midfield.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of that pick. That's an exciting one. Will, I might throw straight back to you on our next player here, which is Jamie Lambert, one who averaged 89 last season, and he's coming into a pretty undersized Collingwood midfield.
Yeah, Jamie Lambert was a player who I actually picked up as a unique player last year, and she did me really well, especially scoring some really big scores later in the season. Her ability to hit the scoreboard makes her a really valuable fantasy player. She's amongst that group of players who could push up into that 90. She was averaging 90 for a bit of the season before, I say a slump, but she dropped a little bit in the middle of the season, probably copped a bit more attention with Davey and then eventually Benici going out. But I think she's a really interesting, unique option, and coming off a best and fairest winning season, I don't see any reason why she couldn't continue to be a fantastic fantasy option.
Yeah, no, I really rate the pick. I think, you know, coming into last season, she was looking at being second fiddle almost to Britt Bonici, but, you know, they're going into this preseason
probably third behind.
Third fiddle, John.
Third fiddle. Davey and Bonici. She could be having second fiddle once Davey went down, and then is now the main player in there. And it kind of showed in the last round against Richmond in the final game. She had 31 disposals and scored 130 points, which was fantastic for me as a unique pick in the final round. But there's also a few lower scores, and I say lower, I'm talking 70s and a 50 in there as well. So I think because they've lost a few of those star players, they will look to share the load a bit, which is always a bit of a concern when you're picking a upper tier midfielder.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Next on our list is Tilly Lucas-Rodd, and Liam, I might throw to you for this one. I'm very excited we got a Hawk on the list here. Is she one you're considering for your team?
Yeah, Tilly Lucas-Rodd is super hot on my list, and that's because she's only priced at 88 because she started the season with very limited CDAs, below 50% in each of the first four games. And then after round five, she hit the midfield and didn't drop below 73% CDAs. And she then proceeded to not drop below 83 for the rest of the season, with three scores above 100 and two scores in the 90s. So once she hit the midfield, she had a super fantasy relevant game. She's a very high tackling player, has a ferocious tenacity at the stoppage. And as a result, I anticipate that she would be able to push into the 90s, also by virtue of being the best midfielder on a team. And that will be undisputable. I don't see her ever dropping below the top midfielder at Hawthorn. And I think there's a very cogent strategy to the idea of you pick midfielders who you think are going to be the best midfielder on their team, role unchanged, no matter what happens.
Yeah, I was a really big fan of watching Tilly Lucas-Rodd on the weekend. She was the one that Beck Goddard called out as having a phenomenal game. You always love that praise from a coach. But yeah, I suppose my question is she going to be susceptible to a tag given the Hawks midfield after her? It drops away a little bit.
See, this is part of the reason why I don't think it's so much of an issue with the tag, because she plays in such a fashion that a lot of it comes from just being a pest at the stoppage, right? Like, she can, once she was like in the midfield more, she was averaging 10 tackles a game. That suggests to me that she is more than capable of scoring even if she were to be tagged.
Well, it sounds like Matilda's going to be waltzing into our teams, isn't she? I still can't get over the fact that her full name is Matilda. It doesn't sound right to me yet. But next one we've got down, one who performed very, very well last season was Hayley Miller. And I've gone on and on about in the Freo episode. Hayley Miller is my favourite player by a very, very significant margin. But I have a very big red flag in her. She hasn't played either of the two preseason games, which, you know, not all players do. I think Jamie Lambert was one that missed as well, but Jamie Lambert missed because she was unavailable. Hayley Miller seems to have missed because of a calf injury. And that to me is just alarm bells ringing everywhere.
So I'm hearing quite a big red flag with a little bit of green. Would you say she's a bit of a Moroccan flag?
This is the strangest theme to be carrying on through our episodes.
Why? Well, of all the effort we put into making these episodes quality, you're like, oh, people want flag facts.
Flag facts with Mel.
Flag facts.
Sorry, guys. I've been sitting here waiting for an opportunity to say that.
You've just been Googling flags all day, trying to figure out which ones are different colours.
No stats, no AFLW fantasy stats, just beach, just can I find green and red flags?
This really explains the MCG photo she sent in earlier, asking if it was the Irish flag or the Italian flag.
Oh, golly, okay, I've got that out of the way. We can now have a serious conversation about
a normal conversation, yeah.
So serious chat. I think the other red flag to go with Hayley Miller is that she's not as high scoring when Bowers is in the middle. There's just a little bit less to go around. She definitely looked amazing last year when her sidecar was Gabby O'Sullivan, but doesn't score at like the same high, super, super high scores when Bowers is there too.
One thing I will just flag with Freo is with the Antonios both going down to injury, there's been a suggestion that Gab O'Sullivan might move back forward. Does that help Hayley Miller, or is it still just because Bowers is the main player in there, probably not as good for her?
Like, Gab O'Sullivan did kind of spend time forward, a little bit more time forward, when Bowers was back anyway. Gab O'Sullivan really consolidated her position as a top forward last year. With Bowers out, she moved up the food chain. She'd already started in the midfield at the beginning of the season, but then really pushed on from there. maybe it might help Emily. It maybe helps Miller a little bit, but I still think that that's just like another thing you've got to factor in if Bowers plays a full season.
The one thing that I see Bowers having an impact on is that when Bowers is in, they're more likely to win games. And Hayley Miller, you could see that basically if they were losing early on in a game, she would lift to just such an elite level. I really love what she is as a leader to Freer. And if they're winning games or feeling more comfortable in that midfield because of Bowers' presence, that could be a limiting factor. But we might jump onto our last other chance that we see for the top five, which is Mon Conti. Mel, what do you think of Conti's efforts against the Hawthorn Hawks this weekend?
I'm a big Conti fan, so it might be to my disadvantage, but she just is so great to watch play. And I had her in my team last season because she was just amazing for Richmond. And watching her play on Sunday, she also looked fantastic. You can spot her from a distance because the way she runs is just...
To quote Liam, she moves differently.
Yes, she moves differently.
She moved different. She moves different.
Look, I think, and I'll go on a little bit about this later, but I think Richmond are in for a big year. And if Mon Conti is getting more of the ball, she has the potential to go up in my mind. I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up in that top five. I'm really hopeful for her this year.
Yeah, at the time of this recording, Mon Conti currently sits as my second midfielder. And I think Mon Conti's an interesting player because to me, I think, contrary to the popular thoughts in terms of fantasy, I think giving her midfield reinforcements with the likes of Grace Egan, who we might talk a bit about later, and also Ellie McKenzie back in there actually suits her because it means that she's going to be receiving the ball to get those more dangerous disposals and probably possibly kicking more goals. So Mon Conti is a player to me who I think is a really good shout. Even if just as a player who you can use as a stepping stone to get up to Bowers, I think she's one of those players that you're going to be very happy with her in your team your whole time, but she's also right in that price range where she might be useful to move upwards as well. So I think there's a lot of upside regardless of which strategy you are looking at with Mon Conti.
Yeah, having kind of watched a fair bit of Mon Conti last year, she definitely suffered from the problem of not having someone to get lots of cheap possessions from. And we won't rehash too much of what we talked about in the Richmond episode, but I think that the addition of Grace Egan and just having watched the way that Ellie McKenzie was able to command extra defenders, I see that as a benefit for Mon Conti. And I think the benefit will be in there will be other players who can command the ball in the midfield that will be able to then kick it to her, which increases her marks. And I think that given that she's a relatively low tackle player, if she can push up a stat in another area, that might push her into that 90s range.
Yeah, I think she only passed 3 marks once last season. You say she's a low tackle player, but she did have quite a few games with 6-plus tackles. So I think that she will... It's the marks, as you say, Liam, that will be the area of improvement for her. If she's got players like McKenzie and Egan getting it in the middle to get it out to her rather than her having to do it all herself, which was a lot of the case last season, I think that really helps and should hopefully push her at least up over 90.
All right, I think that's a good wrap there of our top 5 chances, but I'm really keen to get stuck into the next section here because these are the picks that win your seasons. So last year, we had a few players that sort of broke from that 60 price and jumped up into the high 80s, 90s. A couple examples are some of the players we've just talked about. So Emily Bates, 2021, she had a season of 60, and last season pushed that up to about 91. Hayley Miller, very much the same, came into the season with a 63 price point, jumped up to 90. And Tilly Lucas-Rodd started at 58, even lower, and again, 89 there. So big, big jumps. And I suppose the 4 of us, we were early adopters of a few of these players. I mean, Emily Bates and Hayley Miller were ones that I jumped on really early. I'm sure you guys can say the same. But, you know, now that they're fully priced, we're looking for the next set. Who are the speculative picks here that are going to be, you know, taking us from, you know, good fantasy teams into that top 100 chance? So, Will, I might start with you because I think you've pulled a player out here that I'm a really big fan of.
Yeah, for me, Elise Parker is the one that I'm super keen on. She's my current M3. She's priced to 75, so a bit below those other ones, but has a previous best average of 91. And last season, her average was affected by getting concussed in the final round of the season with just a 27. To me, Parker is the commanding presence in that GWS midfield. She had a bit of a down year last season. I think she's primed for a big, big season seven.
What do you think contributed to her down year last year? Notwithstanding, you know, factoring in a low injury score, is the concern not that there are just, you know, GWS was a midfield structure that was really struggling, and additionally they're bringing in a new coach, meaning there's probably going to be less role certainty for her?
I mean, I think you've basically just answered your own question there, Liam. I think that's exactly the case. I think new coach, bit of change in the way that the team was working. I think things just genuinely just didn't really work for GWS last season. And I think that's something that they've had a season to work on those sorts of things, bit more consistency. I think it'll really benefit that GWS midfield. I actually think one of the other things that probably took away from Alice Parker's scoring was actually the loss of Becky Beeson. So she's another player that I'm quite interested in. She averaged 57 last year due to quite a bad injury, but unfortunately is priced at about 73. So the value's not quite as I probably would have liked for an injured player. But with her missing, Parker had a bit of a dip in the middle of the season, probably just because there wasn't that extra player. And Beeson played much more of an extractor role. So she was one getting it out to players like Parker who could just bullock out of the stoppages and get away with those kicks. So I think Beeson back in this team probably helps Parker as well.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of this pick. If you take that 27 out, she's already averaging in the low 80s last season. So there's, you know, very easy scope for improvement there. But as you say, Will, there's a lot of good factors that are working for her this season. At the moment, she even sits at my M2, to be honest.
Yeah, I had her at my M2 before a bit of a switch got me up to Mon Conti as my M2, but I was very, very keen on Elise Parker, and she is almost guaranteed to be in my starting side.
Yeah, she's sitting at my M2 as well.
Another pair that we're looking at are from the St Kilda Saints. Liam, you've been looking at Tahni White and Georgia Patrikios.
Yeah, so Tahni White was a value pick last year as she transitioned from a kind of mid-half back role into being a permanent midfielder last season. She looked excellent. She has a tenacity at the stoppage and just a willingness to kind of try and tackle people as much as she can and not get beaten to the ball. That meant that she was a very, very good midfielder last year. But I think the big thing for her is that she's now going to spend another season in the midfield. It looks like St Kilda should actually be improved as a side, and she's the kind of player that will bully teams that are worse than you just by being hungrier to the stoppage. So I still think she's got potential to go up like 10, 15 points. And also just talking to her, it does sound like they're going to be more attacking.
I was just going to say, it's interesting you say that you reckon she can jump up another 10 or 15 next season, because she was one of those ones that I rode the wave of last season, where she was coming in off a season 5 average of maybe 50, and then brought her in as like mid-price madness in season 6, and her first game was 100, and her average already went up quite a lot. So I definitely think she would be in for a better season, but I'm not sure if she's going to have such a massive jump again straight away.
Yeah, and the thing that probably concerns me is fantastic first round score of 100, but only one other score of 80. Mm. And I worry that the inclusion of Patrikios means that there's a bit less of a disposals on offer, because Patrikios has traditionally been that high disposal player as opposed to Tahni White, who has scored a lot of her points through tackles.
Yeah, there's a one in, one out principle here, though, where I know we're a little bit worried about Patrikios coming in, but you've also got Telly Lucas-Rodd leaving that midfield. And Patrikios is definitely one on the outside, and they're going to need someone in there getting it out to her. Having watched the weekend, I think Tahni White, I wish she'd had 5 tackles in the first 10 minutes of that quarter on Friday. I think after another season of sort of training in the midfield is another big thing, right? It's one thing to have a last-minute change, because coming into Season 6, there was a lot of uncertainty with those COVID outs, and, you know, you're kind of being rushed in, you're feeling a little bit uncertain. She's now had a whole season of sort of getting used to the role. I can see a little bit of improvement on the horizon.
I see someone like Tahni White having a similar trajectory to someone like Mon Conti, who has taken kind of steps to improve her scoring each year. But the big thing we heard from Mon Conti was the consistency in her game. So I see Tani White and an extra preseason being able to transition that into more consistent 70s to 80s scores, or even 80s to 90s in the same way that Conti did last year, to mean that she can push up into that next tier.
Just quickly, I reckon Tani White sounds like a season 8 pick as opposed to a season 7 pick from what you've said. If she's going to keep going up those steps, I reckon season 8, Tani White, absolutely primed.
Now, we've buried the lead a little bit here because we've been talking about Tani White, but Georgia Patrikios is one that's going to have a lot of coaches excited this preseason. Liam, do you want to tell us why we might want to pick her in the team?
Yeah, so the thing with Georgia Patrikios is that we're looking for players who can go up into the 80 to 90 tier from the 60s and 70s. Georgia Patrikios is priced at 63 because of the fact that she didn't play a single game last season. So 30% discount, and her best was the season prior when she went at 90. Now, with the big asterisk that if she is healthy and fit, if she is back in the midfield, we know that she's done it before, and the only reason she hasn't is she's coming in at discount is because she didn't play. I think that she is a super, super interesting player to talk about because that asterisk could be massive at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's interesting because talking with Tani White about it, she said she was still sort of building up match fitness. She's obviously a very fit player in person, but that's the match fitness that you really lose with time out of the game. And I think, Jono, you can speak to this. Mm. Despite playing in the practice game, it's going to be interesting to see how she comes into a proper season of AFLW like that.
Yeah. So just to start with, she was electric in that first half of the game. Like, I can see very much how she's going to improve St Kilda's ball movement. They were so much better with her in there. There was a point in the first quarter where I think, you know, there was a turnover at halfback. They flipped it out to her. She's run straight through the middle, gotten inside 50, and that was their first goal to Kate Sheelor, was on the back of that effort. So very dynamic and very exciting that they've got her back. Having said that, I think she was clearly getting a touchback. She had a lot of missed tackles. So, you know, once we got towards the back end of the game, she was sticking those a little bit better, and I can see that being a good part of her scoring. But I didn't see her much in the last quarter. And that could be, on the one hand, you're facing Brisbane. It's a very tough game. It's a hard game to run out. But on the other hand, is it fitness-based? Who knows?
Yeah, just worry with a lack of a preseason that she might start slowly, peak in the middle, and then tail off as the season goes just because she doesn't have that full season behind her. But it's a huge unknown. And if she's picked round one, you're getting a player who we know can average 90 at a price of around 60. It's a massive bargain for someone we know can jump up to that top five-ish area.
Yeah, I really like the look of St Kilda's draw this season. They play a few of the expansion sides pretty early on, so it's a risk that I'm really keen to take. I don't currently have her in my side, but that's because I can't find a way to afford her at M3. That's basically it. I'm trying to find that structure that works.
Yeah, I've been flicking around. I found a way that if I can severely gut my back line, I can actually afford her as my M4, I believe it is, which would be wild, but I'm not sure about that as a tactic. Having said that, I am still very keen to run with the three premiums. I think that the three that I've got a very good chance to be around that top five mark, but gee, it's such an interesting debate, especially with some of these players in that middle band.
Yeah, well, I want to go to one who's a little bit cheaper than those even. And that is Alison Drennan. Mel, do you want to tell us a little bit about this Gold Coast player?
Yeah, so she's currently my M3 at time of recording. I watched the Gold Coast game and she was by far the standout in the midfield there. She's someone that has a very high ceiling and she had quite a few average-ish games in season 6, which means that her average is a bit lower, but she scored over 100. 3-4 times. She's clearly fantastic, knows what she's doing. And I just feel like there's a good potential that she will increase this year, and I therefore want her in my team. Anyone else is bullish on her?
I actually think with Ali Drennan, I think the biggest help for Ali Drennan will actually be the continued emergence of Charlie Rowbottom.
Mm.
I think having a contested ball in there to be feeding it out to a player like Drennan is super important. And I think she could be a bit of a smoky. Being a Gold Coast player, for whatever reason, people seem to just ignore some of those interstate team players. So it's a unique pick that I can see a lot of value in. I think that those Gold Coast players, Gold Coast are a team on the up, and Alison Drennan will be a big part of that alongside Charlie Rowbottom.
Absolutely. But another couple that also looked good from that game, actually, when they were playing Geelong, was Georgie Paspakis and Nina Morrison. They were really supporting Geelong's midfield there. There was a bit of wet weather footy. Nina Morrison's grabbing footy. Bit of wet weather footy. Nina Morrison's all over the tackles, which is great for. Look, they were both standouts in season six. Georgie Paspakis coming in for her first season, and she was a kind of a must-have, especially early on. Nina Morrison was a well-known name, and she was probably in everyone's team as well at the start of season six. Part of me thinks that these guys might have had their time in season six and that season seven will be much of the same. So if you're looking for someone with to get you consistent points, almost like guaranteed points, then they would be good picks. I'm not sure if they're going to be speculative enough to jump up into that next bracket, but they have done it before.
Yeah, I think one of the things we talked about with Nina Morrison on that Geelong episode is there's going to be a lot of players running through that Geelong midfield. They've built a good core of players, which makes it really hard to pick one from a fantasy perspective. Personally, if I was picking a Geelong midfielder to jump up into that group, I would pick Amy McDonald, who was one of my speculative picks last year. But that Geelong midfield, to me, there's just too many players running through there to guarantee a 90 average.
On Amy McDonald, where do you think the improvement comes from? Because I think with at least Nina Morrison, she's a former number one draft pick who we've seen just in her second season can go at above 80 three times in, you know, eight games. We know that she's got that potential, and we know that she was coming back up to fitness last year. Amy McDonald had a great year last year in a pretty average side, but where does that improvement come from for her?
See, to me, the improvement in not just Amy McDonald, but Geelong in general, actually comes from marks. Geelong, we talked about this a bit in the Geelong episode as well. Geelong averaged incredibly few marks, especially through that midfield. She only had 5 marks for the entire season. That's less than a mark a game. If she can lift that up to a couple of marks a game, that's all of a sudden another, you know, 10 points there that she could be getting. So to me, it's going to be game style based, not necessarily personal improvement. I think she definitely can personally improve and continue pushing her ball winning. But to me, a shift in Geelong's game style where that they start actually getting some more loose marks and getting those extra plus 6 mark kicks is where those Geelong midfielders, including players like Paspakis and Morrison, that's where those points will come from.
We are going pretty long here, so I might just quickly wrap us up and do a bit more of a rapid fire with the last three players I want to talk about. When I ask from you guys, I'm going to give you a player. I want you to say yes or no and what you reckon they're going to average this coming season. That's it. So I'm going to start with you, Liam. Matty Paspakis at the Bombers. Yes or no?
Yes. Yes. And goes at 82.
82 being priced at 71. That's not too bad. Will, I'm going to throw to you next with Ellie Blackburn from the Bulldogs.
Also, yes, I've been tossing up between her and Monconti. I think Blackburn averages 85.
85, not too shabby from an 80. And we've talked on the Bulldogs episode about her fast start potential. So not a bad shout there.
That's why it's a yes. Yeah. Fast start potential.
Mel, might throw to you last year. We've got Dana Hooker at the West Coast Eagles. Yes or no?
Probably also yes. And high 70s.
High 70s. I like that as well. I'm a bit bullish on, I suppose, the Eagles midfield. I think there's going to be potential there somewhere. I just don't know who it is. So fingers crossed it's Hooker.
Yeah, West Coast also, to me, are a bit like Geelong, where they're going to have a few more players running through there. So someone's going to jump out of it. I just don't know who it's going to be. We know that Swanson's going to be super good. Hooker, we know, has the fantasy history. But there's got to be someone else that comes out of that West Coast midfield, I reckon.
Beautiful. Well, I think it's time to jump into our showdown. We have our mid-price madness players. We've got one player each that we're going to be pitching to our listeners. Someone who is averaging under 60 was the requirement, and someone that we think is going to have the opportunity to jump from a very mediocre average to a potential game-winning pick. So I'm going to start us off with Michaela Cann from the Pies. Last season was priced at 60, but in the final few rounds, really jumped up to fill that hole that was being left in the Collingwood midfield by Davey and Benici, both going down. The ACL twins there were a bit of a struggle. I think Michaela Cann averaged maybe 70 to 75 across those last few weeks, if you include the final as well. It was a good stretch of five games there, which really helped to give us some confidence that she's got that fantasy potential. She's done that coming off a season where she was playing as a half forward, sometimes rotating in the middle. If she has now a full preseason of having rotated through, really sort of cement herself in an understanding of what that role entails, I think there's a lot of potential here for her to jump up to a 75 to 80 average.
Yeah, so I think the flag for me there is if they were really hot on her being an inside mid, I don't know if Ruby Slasher is running for the midfield.
Yeah, look, I mean, my reading of it is that Slasher's only going to be pinch hitting in there. I don't think she's a starter in that midfield. I think Cann and Lambert are going to be the two that take the majority of that midfield time.
I think Cann is the extractor. I think Lambert is going to be the main player in there. And I think the role that Slasher will play would be akin to Bree Davey, where it's a bit of an every sort of role, big body in there, can be contested but also burst from the stoppages. So I quite like Michaela Cann as a pick based on that end.
Well, why don't we jump over to you, Will? Who's your player that you've picked for us?
So I'm picking Isabel Dawes, and she's priced an average of 50, but I think she's set for a really big year in that Brisbane midfield. I think she's going to take over from Cathy Svark and Ellie Anderson as that main centre bounce attendee alongside Emily Bates. And I think that Bates getting slightly more attention based on her best and fairest winning season means that Bella Dawes is absolutely primed to jump from a 50 average up to towards that 70 mark. Only 21, so still lots of improvement potential and cheaper than Michaela Cann. So I think that's a really, really good option for you.
Well, she had some low scores in season six, like some quite low scores, 27, for example. Do you know what went into that?
I think she was spending a fair bit of time outside of that midfield. So she was named on the half forward flank for a lot of the games, still managed to score a fair few good scores around that 60 to 70 mark. So if she can really push into that midfield, much like a Tani White, I reckon there's a lot of improvement there.
I did watch the game on Friday and, geez, she was phenomenal. I think outside of Emily Bates, I don't think there was a better player on the ground than Bella Dawes. So I can see it happening. She got a lot of touches, which is, you know, always very handy. So
yeah, I think my flag on Bella Dawes is actually the fact that she's 21 and Brisbane have the hardest schedule this season. You're going to want bigger bodied midfielders. As much as you think she's the replacement for Ali Anderson and Cathy Svark, that is a pretty damn good M2, M3 duo, particularly for size and capacity to withstand some pretty brutal contests. And I think, Mel, you ask why there was a 20 score in there. The big flag for me, that was off the back of 70% CBAs. Like, that's like name up in lights as like probably can't hack it for a full season. So I still think there might be another couple of years where she fails to really cement herself as the key ball winner, as a key ball winner at Brisbane.
Season 8 pick it is then. Liam, who are you going for then?
I'm going for a player that we've actually already talked about, which is Grace Egan, who was remarkably consistent last year at Collingwood. She kind of sits at 60, priced at 60. The reason why I'm super hot on her is she moves into Collingwood's midfield, a midfield that really struggled for a second fiddle to Monconti, and goes in pretty much immediately at M2. She is their second best midfielder, and she is the player that Monconti needs to be there to be the ball extractor. We had Gabby Seymour on talk about the fact that she is just a bull and seems to have learnt a little bit from Maddie Presparkas. So she's already got the role at Richmond. Then you combine that with the fact she was still scoring 60s whilst playing predominantly on the wing, and she was sixth in line for CBAs at Carlton. I see Richmond improving. I see her being core to that. And just watching her on the weekend, she really looked like she enjoyed the additional stoppage time that came with CBAs. I'm super hot on Grace Egan this season.
Yeah, I think that move from a wing to an inside role was something that we probably didn't see coming, but from what we've seen in both the practice game and what Gabby Seymour said, is definitely a big benefit for fantasy scoring.
Yeah, and there's one I'll say it's a side benefit, I suppose, of picking Grace Egan. That red hair, very easy to pick out on a field. If you're a new fantasy coach trying to pick up the FLW, want to watch your players, you'll pick her out so easily.
Well, I've almost got like a counter-argument to that specifically. Unfortunately, I went fourth in the draft.
Are you saying you've got a counter-argument that she won't because she has red hair?
No. My counter-argument is that I went fourth in the draft and the person I really wanted to talk about was Sarah Hoskins, I don't know how this plays with your potential of Grace Egan, but I think Sarah Hosking is actually the one. If you're going to pick a midfield madness player, if you're going to pick a midfield madness player from Richmond, I think it should be Sarah Hosking instead. And the reason why is that she, out of her games last year, she was very consistent, but fairly low, mind you, and then she absolutely hit her peaks in round 9. She's shown in the season before that she can be averaging up there around mid to high 70s with quite a few games over or around 80 in the past. She's also nice and easy to spot because her hair is very blonde. She does look a little bit like Katie Brennan, though.
I'm going to counter that because she looks exactly like the centre halfback for Richmond in Jess Hosking.
True.
So
she's one of a bunch. You can get excited about all of their performance because you're going to get them confused. That's absolutely for sure. But I think she's the one to pick. Watching her on Sunday, she just looked fantastic. She was like another standout for me on the ground. And I also think that Richmond's going to have a great year, as I mentioned before. So I would pick her over Egan personally. Also in the CBA is right up next to her.
Yeah, I think the problem with someone like Sarah Hosking is she was already second in line for CBAs last year, and I see her time in the middle actually decreasing as a result of the inclusion of Egan, but then also the resurgence of an Ellie McKenzie who looks like she will be a near permanent midfield this year after she's also swapped between midfielder and forward in her first two seasons, coming off injury as well. So I actually see her midfield role decreasing, spending some more time outside, and as a result, I'd be less hot on Hosking than I would be on Egan.
I thought it was pretty interesting on Sunday because they only ran 4 players through the middle the whole game, Richmond, which was, as you say, Conti, Egan, Hosking, and McKenzie. So I mean, even if she loses a couple minutes, she's not going to lose a whole lot. And the other thing is, we've talked about how Mon Conti is going to be lifted up by the fact she's got players around her who can get her the ball. Hosking's another that I can see having the same, you know, uplift on the basis that she's got some players supporting her. Look, that's going to be our 4. I'm keen to hear from the listeners, how do you think we went? Which player of the 4 is one that you are most likely to consider starting in your team? Let us know in the comments. We might jump through some honourable mentions that were pretty close to getting into this category, but for whatever reason weren't selected. I think the first we've got to go to is the Port Adelaide midfield, because there were 3-4 options there that we were strongly considering to chuck in here, but we decided not to go with any of them. So that was Jackie Yorston, Maria Maloney, Hannah Dunn, and Justine Mules. Liam, you were at this game. What, I suppose, stopped you from picking any of them for this category?
Oh, I think that, well, I was hot on Egan or Yorston. I just think that I saw a lot more of Grace Egan, and I think the narrative there is much easier because she's going to be kind of very much set in line. And I think the other problem with trying to watch Port Adelaide's midfield is that it was very, very difficult to see what their midfield structure is going to look like because it changed at halftime. And then most of the game was not spent in the midfield in the first half. There was not a particularly high scoring game. It was pretty kind of messy. So I think the reason why I'm still hot on Yorston is the fact that she has done exactly what she's about to do at Port Adelaide before, when she went and played at the Gold Coast, where she was one of the first in line for CBAs on an expansion side, and that was when she had her best season ever, where she averaged 70. She's going to come into this season substantially less than that because she was pushed out by the emergence of Charlie Rowbottom, and as a result, I think she is the kind of perfect player to also fit into this tier.
Yeah, I think of all the Port Adelaide players, she's definitely the one I'd keep an eye on. I think given how cheap some of these players are, they might be someone just to watch early on. And if any of them look to be getting that role, jump on quickly and you can ride them up. I might keep us moving with Laura Gardner from Geelong. Will, what did you think of her?
Yeah, Laura Gardner, we've talked about her VFLW form. She knows how to get the ball, and if that can translate to AFLW level, you've got a player who genuinely could push up into that tier. But the big question mark, and we talked a bit about this with Morrison and McDonald, is does she get that midfield time? She did get the CBAs in that game against Gold Coast, but there's still a lot of players to run through that Geelong midfield. I think she's one that I'd probably wait and see how she goes early on, and could be a big riser next season as a result.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's... it's always frustrating when you've got too many players in the mix and it just means no one ends up being worth picking. So frustrating, but one to watch because her VFLW numbers are sensational.
Exactly. If she can bring that to here, well, it's interesting because she's going to have to force out someone like a Georgie Prasparkas and Nina Morrison or a Becky Webster into a different position, which is not an easy thing to do. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. Potential injury to Becky Webster might open up a spot, so she could actually get a bit of time early on.
Yeah, last one I'm going to throw to you here is Bella Lewis at West Coast. Mel, what did you make of her game?
Look, I have said a few times that I'm not going to go back to anyone that's burnt me before, and Bella Lewis absolutely roasted me last season because I had her in my starting side to get a 23 in round one and then a 25 in round two, and then she left after she lost me heaps of money, and it was a very disappointing start to season six. However...
I'm a little disappointed Liam didn't talk on this because she was Liam's girl and we all brought her in at Liam's suggestion. Oh, Liam.
I think season seven could be her year for consistency. She looked great playing against Frio. Again, we keep saying the same things again and again here, but I reckon West Coast going to have to get better this year. She was written up as one of the top four players along with kind of her, Swanson, McCarthy, and new rookie Roberts. It just makes me think that she's going to be a core part of the team, of a team that's going to be doing better. And she's got, because she's got all those really low scores from the start of season six baked into her average, I think she's got potential to go up.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think one to watch, definitely. And one if you're keen on starter in your team. One other player that I was considering looking at was Chloe Dalton from the GWS Giants. And I'm doing this, I think, for a wing role that she plays, coming off halfback sometimes. 47 is probably a bit pricey. You're not getting too much value out of her. But the new GWS game plan is almost built around her speed. What she was doing to transition that ball forward was sensational. I reckon they're going to try and get it into her hands as much as possible. So one to watch there. And then finally, Elise O'Day, priced at 40, was also getting a lot of minutes through that Carlton midfield. So
I'd like to say I copped a lot of flack for that one, and has come to pass. So I'll take that as a little tick.
Look, had I been on the Carlton podcast, I'm sure I would have been there agreeing with you, but more likely telling you you're an idiot. So
probably it's a classic Will veteran pick, because I know that four seasons ago she was a fantastic midfielder. So
I think we're on to our rookies, which is very exciting. We've got a lot of talent here, and we've got a lot of players we're going to need to talk through. So we might just go through this game by game. What we're defining as a rookie is anyone under the price of Montana Ham, the number one draft pick from last season. So there might be some players here who have played before, but they're certainly very, very cheap to start the season. And we might just start there, because what a sensational game. She only played a half in that Sydney Collingwood game, but she is a giant on the park, and her contested work was phenomenal.
Yeah, the only question with Montana Ham is, do you pay up that price? Because there's no doubt in my mind that she is going to be a superstar player.
Yeah, it's definitely one that is pretty safe to start the season. What's interesting about Sydney is that not many of their other midfield unit is actually listed as midfielders. We talked to Brennan Tarrant a little bit earlier about how a lot of Sydney were trialled through the middle, and a lot of players that had played in defence or forward, I suppose, at the junior levels, have now come up and taking that midfield role. So we're probably not going to be able to talk about too many Sydney players outside of Montana Ham. Sophia Hurley was the only other one from that line who played the first half of the game, looked very, very good. She's probably more of an outside player for the Swans, but she started in that center bounce rotation, and I think she's going to be very, very skillful on the outside. My biggest question, I suppose, is Sydney's midfield unit is very, very young. Are they going to get enough of the ball?
The lesson we learned from Charlie Rowbottom wasn't so much that whether or not she was going to be good. It's like, was she guaranteed a position in the midfield? Sydney has one of the most speculative looking entire lineups, and everything could change outside of probably Montana Ham as their M1. I'm super keen on picking her, but I also think that she will be very, very highly picked amongst the rookies. So there's almost no disadvantage to having her if you think she's going to go at like 50s or 60s. Basically play the same as Robottom last year. You're not really losing out substantially. So I think she's going to be a very important pick to have in your side, kind of pending what the ownership data says.
I am going to pay up for her, I reckon, because I think, like with Charlie Robottom, who I didn't bring in last season at all, let alone at the start when I should have, spewing the whole time, being like, damn it, I wish I brought in the number one draft pick. It was there for me to pick and I chose not to. So I'm not going to make the same mistake again.
Just to run through a few of the other Sydney players that are rookie priced, we probably expect to start in their best 21. You have Ella Heads, who was taking kickouts down back. I think she'll be one that gets that kickout role for the season. But I suppose the question is, how much do we expect the ball to live back there? And is she one starting in your team for that reason?
I think the outside players are really going to struggle. I think it's going to be those non-extractors who are going to have an issue when they get absolutely beaten to the contest every time. And that's why I think someone like a Montana Ham is a much safer pick in that midfield.
Yeah, I agree. If you're picking a Sydney midfielder, Ham is clearly the option. Maybe Sophia Hurley, because she is an elite ball winner, but just being in that stoppage area is where Sydney is the best chance of getting that ball. So I completely agree with you. The outside players that may struggle at Sydney.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You've got Alana Woodward, who was also running on the wings for a little bit, and then Sarah Dargan. You have Sarah Dargan, Zoe Harrell, and Sarah Ford all playing as that half forward roles at times. A lot of them would probably be coming off the bench because you've got some, I suppose, slightly stronger options off half forward there in Lisa Steen, and Cynthia Hamilton was playing as a deep forward, but they're forward listed, so we're not going to worry about them for now. I don't think any of them are going to be particularly relevant for our fantasy teams, but one that we could be very wrong, who knows? So keep an eye on in the first couple rounds. On the other side of the ground, you had a Collingwood player. You had Imogen Evans and Joanna Lynn have a little bit of time through that midfield. Will, do you want to tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, both of them coming in at very low prices. The one I'm probably more interested in is Joanna Lynn. I think she'll likely pick up a wing role. Hasn't been a particularly high scorer at AFLW level, but at just 30,000 isn't a bad option. Imogen Evans looks like a future talent, but I struggle to see her getting regular game time in that Collingwood midfield, even with the injuries that they do have.
I've been a bit quiet on these ones, but it's mostly because I'm not very certain about Sydney. I'm more just listening and learning, and I don't think the Collingwood rookies are the way to go in the mid. So,
well, we might throw to a game that you did get a little bit of a chance to look at, which was the St Kilda Brisbane game. You were having a quick look at Lily Postlewaite.
Oh, yes. So she's one of the ones that she's going to be priced at basement price, not because she's a rookie per se, but because she's coming back after doing her ACL in round 4 of 2021, so season 5, which meant that she missed season 6 altogether, and she's coming back in season 7. But she does have 11 games of experience under her belt from playing with Brisbane before, and I think that's going to be really interesting. There's quite a few actually mids that are coming in basement priced on this list that we'll talk through that have experience and just missed season 6. And I think that adds another element. Like, we don't get the element of surprise and freshness and excitement around the high draft picks like the Montana Hams that we were talking about before, but we get experience and they're coming back, hopefully getting a new role. I think I'm not confident enough to bring her in straight away, but I think she would be an interesting one to watch.
She looked to be playing a little bit off half forward, which, I mean, for the Brisbane Lions, the ball's going to be up there a little bit, but it does, I suppose, just have a little bit of concern for me there. Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely one to keep on our watch list, I guess. Another player in that same game was St Kilda midfielder Hannah Stewart. We've talked a little bit about the Saints midfield mix so far. We talked about Hannah Priest on the Defenders episode. We've talked through Patrikios and White a little bit earlier today, but I suppose the last in that mix of midfield minutes was Hannah Stewart. Liam, what did you make of her game?
Yeah, look, Hannah Stewart's someone who will probably be, you know, playing a similar style to Tahnee White, in that she does love a tackle, is a very good contested player, She comes in with an elite scoring pedigree, particularly in the back half of the VFLW season last year, and has been around the Saints system for quite a while. If she's getting CBAs, I think she's definitely one to look at. She'll be bargain priced. She will be a more mature body. And I think for me, in season 7, it's going to be picking bargain priced players, particularly to sit on your bench or maybe at your fives, who are getting CBAs. And then additionally, if they've got CBAs and previous experience at some level. And I think Hannah Stewart hits all of those. She starts round 1. She probably sits on my bench in the midfield.
Yeah. The other thing with rookies is job security is sometimes a question, but the way that she plays, I think St Kilda really, really need. Some of the St Kilda midfield just kind of whack it on the boot to get forward. And, you know, I mean, sometimes you need that. But what Hannah Stewart was doing in there was she was trying to sort of have a little bit of a burst of speed to get outside of the pack and get the hands out to someone. And it was creating a lot of opportunities for the Saints. And I'm a big fan of someone like that. And I reckon Coach Nick Del Santo would be as well. So, look, one that I might stash on my bench at M6. Moving on, I think the next game that I think everyone was the most excited for on Saturday was the clash of the two expansion sides, the Essendon Bombers and Port Adelaide Power. There's a lot of rookies here that we were considering. Mel, do you want to start us off here with Alana Barber?
Yep, she's currently my M6. We spoke quite a bit about her in the Bombers episode. She could be a little bit exhausted coming into this season, given that she's done back-to-back-to-back-to-back with AFLW for Gold Coast and now Bombers, and then VFLW both for the Bombers. But that's the only kind of red flag I see, because she looked, from what I can see, she looked great on Saturday. She's very experienced. She knows what she's doing. I'm excited for her. I think she's one of the rookies, especially in this expansion club, going to be getting midfield minutes.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate knee injury to Georgia Niskaowen has probably really cemented Alana Barber as a must-have rookie for me. Niskaowen would probably have been that exact same player if she had been in for this season. But with her out, I think Barber slots straight into that probably second midfielder role behind Prasparkas, which is probably the best job security you're going to get from a player of her price.
I reckon she hits all of those same key points that we were talking about with Hannah Stewart, but she has the additional experience of being in an AFL system for another year, and I think she's probably even higher up the pecking order at the Bombers than Stewart is at St Kilda. She's currently in as my M5 for structural reasons. You know, we'll see how that ends up going, but I've seen very little to suggest that she wouldn't be in the top two mid, or at least top three midfielders at the Bombers, and be there pretty consistently.
What about Amelia Radford, though? Also looks great in that game.
Amelia Radford looked really composed and is obviously a great interview. But I think the only thing there is she's not as high up on the pecking order. And so as a result, I'm not as set on her job security. But if she is playing in the first three rounds, she is definitely one to consider, particularly for your bench. She was remarkably consistent as a VFLW player and really looked good as a tackler. And also looked pretty composed with the ball in her hands. Just, I'm not as set on having her in my side just because I think they're going to roll a decent number of bodies through that M3 spot. For rookie-priced defenders, I'd say the only one was probably Abby Dowrick. Midfield, so Port Adelaide midfielders. The one that I probably want to speak to is Abby Dowrick, who, if she is going to start in the midfield, she has some good pedigree in the Sandville W, and as I talked to that on our Port Adelaide episode. So again, just one to watch for. If she's getting those midfield minutes, then she's probably one worth using as a downgrade target.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's all about job security for Abby Dowrick, because Port Adelaide have recruited very strongly in the midfield. We talked about those mid-priced options. We've got four of them straight off the bat in Yorston, Mules, Dunn, and Maria Maloney. So if she can break into that midfield, fantastic option, but it's going to be really whether she can get into the midfield is going to be the key to her scoring, not just her as a player. Because if she gets stuck as a bench player or maybe in a forward or back line, maybe the scoring's not there to make her a rookie that really pushes the price up.
Yeah, she's one that Coach Lauren Arnell called out as like one that they were really excited to see running through there. Had a really, really fantastic contested strength in there, which they were big supporters of. The job security is the one that worries me a little bit, because she's 19. You know, the big bash and crash of AFL footy is going to be a struggle. But if she can hold her own in there and get ahead of some of the other really strong contested players in that Port midfield, then I really like it. Jumping over to the Adelaide North Melbourne game, there was one North player that caught the eye a little bit and the commentator's eye. They mentioned the name Tess Craven a lot. Will, do you want to tell us a little bit about her?
Yeah, Tess Craven's a really interesting player. She was taken as quite a high draft pick by North at the start of last season, but only played one game for a very low score of 12. But she's an inside midfielder who's got all the traits that you love to hear as a young player, which is, you know, effective handballing, confidence in the midfield to get kicks that rarely miss targets. So to me, she's the sort of player that they've spent probably a fair bit of time developing in the VFLW. So if she can start getting more regular game time, I see her as a player that can quite quickly jump up in terms of the scoring, especially being part of a North midfield that is pretty strong. She won't get a huge amount of attention there, so it will come down to whether she can get into that midfield, but I think she's definitely one for the future.
Yeah, it's a tough midfield to break into at North, so I'm not quite sure this season is the one, but geez, she looked very good, had a few good moments, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. She scored pretty well in the VFLW, bearing in mind this is as an 18-year-old, so still a lot of development to go in her game. So, as you say, Jono, I think she's one that we'll probably be talking about possibly in that mid-price madness or even as a potential premium in a few years' time. But for now, at a basement price, yeah, Not the worst option, but there's a lot of value elsewhere as well.
From the Gold Coast Geelongs game, there wasn't really anything interesting here that I saw. Firstly, Geelong didn't have any rookie midfielders in the game, nor did they have any in the platform to choose from. And Gold Coast have three potentials, only one played, which was Claire Ransom. But she didn't look particularly exciting to me. I didn't really hear her name that much. I didn't see that much of her on the ground. So I'm not feeling particularly confident about any of them.
Yeah, I agree. And the one that we were all super interested in pre-season was Alana G, who's unfortunately become injured and won't be playing this season, so she's probably right up there in my season 8 rookie list.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the saddest day of editing, because we had spoken with Tara Bahana for a fair chunk of that interview about how good Alana G was. We were very excited to see her this season, but alas, one to black book already for next season.
Gosh, we're spending a lot of time building our season 8 teams.
Season 8's looking super exciting, guys. Get around it. Here we go.
Jumping over to the Western Bulldogs' Greater Western Sydney games, there are only the two rookies playing from the midfield that are worth discussing. I don't think either of them are particularly fantasy relevant, but you had Amanda Ling, who rotated a little bit through the middle of the ground. Given Kirsty Lamb and Georgia Estathis weren't in this round, I wouldn't see them doing that during the regular season, but you know, a very, very talented player to keep in mind. The other was Keely Coyne. Keely Coyne was playing a little bit on a wing, a little bit up forward. I do think this is one I wanted to call out mainly on the basis that the commentators kept saying her name, and what they should have been saying was Riley Wilcox. Don't get me wrong, I thought the commentating was fantastic and it was so much better than the Sydney Collingwood game when it wasn't there, and I was struggling without it. But yeah, if you might have heard Keely Coyne a lot on that commentating, and it was most of the time it was Riley Wilcox.
Yeah, one thing I will say, Amanda Ling is very similar to me as Tess Craven, high draft pick. Pretty decent VFLW scores in their first season playing at a higher level. Probably one that may get a bit of midfield time, might not. So definitely one for the future, I reckon.
Jumping over to the Fremantle-West Coast game, it was a very, very wet derby. But Mel, do you want to tell us a little bit about some of the players in that game?
I'm so stoked you pronounced that correctly. And there is one player that I really enjoyed watching, Jess Sedgenary from West Coast. So she has a similar situation to Postlethwaite from St Kilda, where she's coming in as rookie price, but it's not because she's a rookie, it's because she didn't play in season 6. So she was marked inactive because she was overdoing a Cycling Australia's Summer Olympics program training, which means that she's, I don't know why she's not doing that anymore, but it means that she's coming in very fit into season 7. She was very prominent on the field, and she was actually named as one of the best players in a lot of the write-ups from that game. She has previously played off centre-half forward and in the mid, and she hasn't been super fantasy relevant to date because she's only been averaging about 30. But if she can potentially go up to about 50, which is essentially what she would be priced at, she could be a really good moneymaker.
I think people also forget about Jess Segenarios. She's actually a premiership player. Premiership player in the 2017 flag for Adelaide. So definitely some experience in a quality team.
Hmm.
Exciting to have someone of that quality running through the midfield there.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And the only one other one from that game that was a little bit of a maybe, the Dockers only have one rookie price mid in the game to choose from, and that's Matilda Sargent. She's not actually rookie priced because she's coming in about 35 grand, so she's not basement priced. She has played 19 games before with an average of 27 because she didn't play in season 6. But therefore, she's coming in a similar situation but with less upside as, say, a Jess Segenary. So if you're looking for a cash cow in a WA rookie-priced mid, I reckon it's probably not Matilda Sargent, and I would pick Jess Segenary instead.
Yeah, I think the big flag there was that that's not a lot of mid-time, and that's with Kiara Bowers and Hayley Miller not playing in that game. So definitely a few risks there. I wouldn't be picking either of those two. In the Carlton-Melbourne game, there's probably only the one rookie player playing in Keely Skepper. She was playing off half forward a little bit for the Blues, and given that it was a good 10-goal margin there at the end, the ball did not go down to the Blues forward line a lot. I can't say that she was necessarily doing a whole lot, but that's probably more about the state of the game. But a few flags there.
Yeah, just one thing though, if she does make it into the midfield rotation, she's got some pretty elite fantasy scoring potential from her junior days. I think she pushed up into the 80s average at an under 18s level, so just wanted to keep an eye out for if the rotations change throughout the season.
Yeah, something I might just flag, which we won't talk about too much today, but a lot of the Carlton midfielders are actually listed as forwards. So that's probably one reason why we haven't talked about them a lot on this episode. Maybe keep an eye out for the next one. The last game of the round was between the Richmond Tigers and the Hawthorn Hawks, another expansion side. And I am very excited to be talking about this one. You had Jazz Fleming and Tamara Smith firmly entrenched in that midfield mix. The Hawks really had only the four players rotating through there. So very exciting to have that. I think Jazz Fleming is one who... I'm really trying hard to try and justify bringing her into my team. She was very, very quick, and you could see that one of her best qualities was if she could get a little bit of space, she was bursting out of those stoppages, getting a lot of space. I reckon the Hawks are going to want the ball in her hands where they can, but Richmond's midfield was just too dominant. So as an outside player in an expansion club, I'm not sure if that's one that you can justify paying. I think she's just under the 50K mark there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is the key there. She's going to be much more expensive than some of these other players that we've mentioned. So to bring in an outside player at an expansion club for that sort of money, is it better to go for even an inside midfielder from the same club, Jono?
Well, jumping onto Tamara Smith, who's the other one there, definitely that inside mid. She would have had 10 tackles this game, was tackling everything she could get her hands on. But I suppose the flip side there was that I didn't see her get a lot of the ball. So, you know, yeah, there's the two sides of the coin. At the moment, I think Tamara Smith's going to have a lot of tackles, and that's something that you can bank a little bit more reliably. So I've currently got her sitting on my bench as the rookie.
As we speak, I have just swapped over Jazz Fleming to Tamara Smith as my utility.
Yeah, Tamara Smith is in at my utility at the moment, and that's because for the main reason is that I don't think Hawthorne's going to have a whole lot of the ball, and there was a stretch of 5 games at the VFLW last year where she had exactly 13 tackles in 4 of those 5 games. Like, remarkably consistent player. If you can go at even half of the stat she did, which is like 10 possessions and 6 tackles, I still think that's worthwhile in your utility.
There are a few other players at the Hawks listed in the midfield who are going to get starting time. Charlotte Baskerin, Bridie Hipwell and Dom Carbone all looked really, really good on the weekend, but were playing off half forward, so a little bit of a challenge there. Dom Carbone did manage to kick the Hawks' only goal for the match, which a bit of a historic thing, first goal in a practice match for the Hawks, very exciting.
And it was off a free kick from the line.
It was off a 50 metre, but Yes, she had, look, she was good tackling presence up forward, took a couple marks. I'll take it. Bridget Deed, unfortunately, was an H&S miss for the weekend, but I'm keeping an eye on that. I think there's a chance, and it would be a big risk for your fantasy side, but I think there's a chance that she comes out and is immediately part of that midfield. So a bit of a shame we couldn't watch her.
Yeah, sounds like one of those players that a lot of people, if she does get that game, might be trading in as an option. One of those ones that you see them go, oh, she scored a pretty decent score first round. She's a must-have rookie. So definitely one to watch.
And finally, for Richmond, we had a fairly impressive player that I did not see coming at all, which was the small forward listed as a midfielder in Amelia Yessir. Mel, tell us a little bit about her game.
Yeah, this was a pretty funny one because after she kicked her first goal, I turned to Jono and I'm like, oh, she could be one that we should watch. Jono's like, no. It was then only after her third goal, Jono's like, oh, maybe you're onto something here. but no, she looked great. She is a bit more expensive at coming in at about 43 grand because she has played a bit before. I'm not sure if she's one I'd bring into my team, but she just was fantastic to watch in the preseason game or practice match. Sorry, looked really fit, running around everywhere. She's one I'm definitely going to be watching in season 7, but not necessarily bringing into the team.
Yeah, I picked her as a rookie pick last season, and I think she may have ended up being in my final squad simply because she didn't generate enough money for me to actually get her out of the team. And that's why I see it as a bit of a red flag. And the other thing we've talked a lot about is how Richmond have now got a lot more midfield options in there, which makes it a bit difficult for her to get the midfield time. And even as a small forwards are probably one of the least consistent fantasy roles, so I probably would be looking elsewhere as well.
Something I've seen which is pretty interesting over these practice matches is that the small forward as the deepest player seems to be in vogue. You could see it at the Hawks. We had Talia Fellows sitting out front. You had Emily Yessir here sitting out the front for Richmond. I'm pretty sure Cynthia Hamilton did the same for Sydney. Liam, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure Federica Frew did it for the Bombers.
Yeah, she was, even though she's a slightly bigger small forward, yeah, she was playing as the deepest player. So it's clearly a tactic.
It's a tactic which I can very much see why. When Richmond got over the back, that is how Yessir was scoring a lot of her goals. She was pretty electric back there. I just worry about it from a scoring sense. If you're playing that deep, the ball's not going to be around you that much. She'd have to score 3 goals every game to be worth starting in our teams, and if she did that, she would probably win the goal kicking for the league. Well, look, that's our overview of the midfield. What a line to do. There was a lot of players to talk about there. Hope we've managed to retain you all the way to the end because, geez, we've probably gone through about 60, 70 players there. But look, before we wrap up for the final 10 seconds here, let's jump through. If we could only have one player in the midfield, the person that is most likely to start in our teams round one, who would that be? I might start with Liam.
I'm super hot on Anne Hatchard. And I know that sounds like a bit of a cop-out because she's going to be probably the highest-priced player in my midfield. I just think she is the new superstar. She's the only person not currently ranked first who has the potential to go first.
Well, I was going to say Hatchard, but just to mix it up then, because she's definitely a lock for me, I will go Conti. Richmond are going to be great, led by Monty Conti.
Monty Conti.
Richmond's going to be great. Conti's going to be great. Keep her in your team.
Will, who's your guaranteed starting mid?
Elise Parker. I love Elise Parker as a player. I think she provides a heap of value. She is a lock to be in my midfield.
I was definitely going to go Parker if you didn't, but I'm actually going to go down the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I think the one rookie that stands out to me as the most likely to generate cash for our teams is Alana Barber. A lot of guaranteed midfield minutes, a lot of tackling pressure. I'm a big fan of how she goes about it, so that's going to be our midfield episode. Yeah, a big one. I think next we're going to launch with our forward lines, which there's a lot of very relevant players here. I'm thinking this is going to be a tough line to pick for the opposite reason as defenders, that there's too many options. I'm actually struggling to fit them all into my side. So very excited to talk about that. keep an eye out for our next episode. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you want to follow us at FreeKickWPod. I'm on Twitter at Odds and Steven.
I'm on Twitter at LMTom1.
I'm on Twitter as hi_mel_d and Insta as hi.mel.d.
And I'm on Instagram at willh_vi.
Thanks, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
Bye. See ya.
Very good. See everyone.